Hello, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and today we will be reading the Thursday, January 29th, 2026, part one of the Pantograph. And thank you for joining us today. We're going to go ahead and start out with higher education. Grant Aids Halo, Learning for Life. Heartland to expand program for students with challenges. 3 hours ago. Normal. More students with learning challenges and disabilities will get the opportunity to receive an education after high school and to learn to become more independent. Heartland Community College's Academy for Learning Opportunities, or HALO, program received $253,766 from the Illinois Community College Board's Initiative Bridge and Transition Grant Program. This funding furthers our efforts to support students participating in our HALO program, said Program Director Corey Folkerts. Growth is inevitable, but really for us, the growth depends on the needs of the students. According to the board, this grant program aims to create or support programs that improve students' transitions to and through post-secondary education up to baccalaureate and into employment. It also supports the transitions for individuals with disabilities, scales programs that promote equity and diversity among those served. HALO provides a higher education experience for students ages 18 to 28 who have intellectual or developmental disabilities or other learning challenges. The program started in 2007 after a group of community members recognized a need for these students, and the first cohort was accepted in 2009. Students engage in experiential activities along with their coursework as a means to identify future goals, develop increased confidence to function independently on campus and as well in their communities. Activities and areas of learning range from soft skills to life skills needed in the transition to adulthood, including cooking, managing money, reading for life, computer technology, social development, community awareness, health and wellness, independent living, and math for life. Upon completion, students receive a 2-year non-degree HALO certificate. In 2023, Heartland added the Transition Year Program to provide a year-long experience that assists students in transitioning to college or in the workforce with the support of their peers and instructors. This program is really for the entire community, and it's for those who feel that they're a best fit, Folkert said. The program has also obviously evolved with changes in times, and we're looking at various things with computer technology to make sure that it's brought up to date. Expanding into Pontiac. The Initiative Bridge and Transition Grant Program is a 15-month grant that runs from January through the end of March of 2027, and this year it will include expanding the Transition Year Program for students on the Pontiac campus. The grant will also help with the purchase of kitchen appliances and equipment for a simulation space, while the remaining funds will be used to support students through the tuition waivers for those in need. In previous years, the grant was used to expand the HALO program to Heartland's Pontiac campus, and actually created the Transition Year Program. The Initiative Bridge and Transition Grant Program continues to be one of our most powerful tools for opening doors to education and career opportunities across Illinois, said ICCB Executive Director Brian Durnham in a statement. These grants allow our colleges to build a strong, seamless pathway that helps learners gain the skills they need, connect with in-demand industries, and ultimately achieve long-term economic mobility. Reaching more students. Karen Orwig, instructor and coordinator with the HALO program at Heartland, said it's been incredible to watch the growth of the program from when she first started. Orwig said each student comes to the program with a different background, and it's been fantastic to see them grow through the program and to be able to live independently by getting their first jobs, buying groceries, and owning their own apartments. Even as much as we see ourselves grow, we're always amazed when we have families who come and say, "I didn't know this was here," Orwig said. For families who have students with intellectual developmental disabilities, we let them know that there is more after high school. A lot of students who finish the HALO program and go into the transition year program tend to take the skills that they have already learned and apply them to their dreams and develop a step-by-step plan to make them a reality, Orwig said. "That's amazing success, and we just celebrate every one of those stories," Orwig added. The HALO program currently serves 51 students across both campuses and programs, and they include students like Jocelyn Peck, 19, of Bloomington, who moved to the community from Texas in 2021. Peck has been in the program for almost 2 years now and has learned everything from money management to applying for jobs and internships, communication, social skills, and other life experiences. Peck said she is currently taking other credit courses at Heartland through a dental program and is looking forward to becoming a dental assistant. "The people and teachers are friendly and always greet you with a smile," Peck said. "Even if you're having a bad day, they understand, and they work with you to try to make it a good day." Visit heartland.edu/HALO for more information about HALO and the program's application process. Once again, it's heartland.edu/HALO for more information. Lawyers organize against overreach. Prosecutors, immigration enforcement unlawful, by the Associated Press, 3 hours ago. Minnesota, Minneapolis. A group of prosecutors concerned about recent immigration enforcement operations launched a project Wednesday to strategize and seek accountability for what they consider federal overreach and unconstitutional behavior. The program is called Fight Against Federal Overreach, a tongue-in-cheek reference to an acronym that is popular in memes and has been used by members of the Trump administration to taunt opponents. Officials in Minnesota, along with criminal justice experts and former federal prosecutors, are increasingly critical of the federal response to the aggressive tactics being used by immigration officers in Minneapolis and the surrounding areas. The killing of two civilians by federal officers, including the fatal shooting of Alex Preddy on Saturday, drew increasing criticism from public officials, including Republicans, and massive protests. Larry Krasner, Philadelphia district attorney and one of the founding members of the group, said he's never before seen the law enforcement tactics and attitude recently apparent in U.S. cities. He said the officers who conceal their faces and badge numbers are unprofessional and that they have been given bad orders from authorities with the poor understanding of the law. He cited a declaration by Vice President J.D. Vance that the officers have immunity from prosecution for any of their actions. "A functional Department of Justice gone. Functional United States attorneys' offices applying the law in an even-handed way gone. Good qualified officials within those organizations, they're retiring, resigning, or leaving," Krasner said. "It used to be you could rely on the federal government to rein in rogue sheriffs who were killing people on the side of the road, but now the federal government are the rogue sheriffs. Local officials must fill the gap where federal authorities are failing, partly because there's no federal pardon for state-level convictions," he said. The Associated Press reached out to the Department of Homeland Security for comment on the group and its accusations and did not receive an immediate response. But DHS Secretary Kristi Noem and other leaders defend the officers' practices and tactics in Minneapolis and elsewhere as constitutional and necessary. Federal officials denied Minnesota investigators access to the scene after the fatal shootings of Preddy and Renee Good. They also said the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division didn't need to open an investigation into the fatal shootings, despite that being a long-standing practice after such fatal encounters. The group, which includes Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty, and Minneapolis and St. Paul are part of the county, as well as prosecutors from Austin, Texas, and several Virginia jurisdictions, among others, said the actions of immigration officers involved in enforcement and operations are having negative repercussions on the criminal justice system. Krasner noted immigration agents have been keeping tabs on courthouse proceedings, targeting and arresting people, usually just outside the buildings. That means victims of crime are afraid to report them, and witnesses and even defendants are afraid to go to court. He said local officials are increasingly concerned about practices such as warrantless entries and unlawful detentions, along with other coercive enforcement tactics. I think that we are feeling that this is the same thing the country is feeling, Krasner said. We are in general underreacting with the county seems to be getting it right now, as well as the country. It's as if they're willing to be pushed and to be pushed and pushed, and they were pushed off a cliff and now it's just too far. Omar attacked, meanwhile, a man sprayed an unknown substance on Democratic U.S. Representative Ian Omar and was tackled to the ground late Tuesday morning during a town hall in Minneapolis. Police identified the man as Anthony Kazmarek, 55. It was not immediately clear if Kazmarek had an attorney. The audience cheered as the man was pinned down and his arms were tied behind his back. In video of the incident, someone in the crowd can be heard saying, "Oh my God, he sprayed something on her." Just before that, Omar called for the abolishment of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and for Noem to resign or face impeachment. Calls are mounting on Capitol Hill for Noem to step down after the killings in Minneapolis. Few Republicans have risen to her defense. ICE cannot be reformed, Omar said seconds before the attack. Minneapolis police said officers saw the man use a syringe to spray an unknown liquid at Omar. They immediately arrested him and booked him at the county jail for third-degree assault, spokesperson Trevor Folk said. Forensic scientists responded to the scene. Omar continued speaking for about 25 minutes after the man was ushered out by security, saying he would not be intimidated. In education, Krishnamurthy haircuts hurt Unit 5 students 3 hours ago. Normal. About 750 students at two McLean County Unit 5 schools will lose educational enrichment under a baby fold program because of Trump administration funding cuts, and educators met with a U.S. Senate candidate Tuesday to talk how to limit the impact. What's really fun about being a kid is being able to do all these fun activities at school, and we will lose a lot of that, either through a direct funding or loss of staffing, said Rebecca Kinsey, community school coordinator at the Baby Fold for Fairview Elementary School in Normal. Fairview was among three stops on Tuesday for U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamurthy, Democrat Schomburg, who was traveling across the state to highlight the impact of federal cuts being made to community resources as the end of the month and to offer support. Krishnamoorthy is among three Democrats competing for the party's nomination to succeed U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Springfield, who is not running for re-election this fall. Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and U.S. Representative Robin Kelly of Linwood are also running in the March 17th primary. On Tuesday afternoon, Krishnamoorthy toured the halls of Fairview while talking with the school administrators, teachers, and staff members, along with the McLean County Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel and State Representative Sharon Chung, a Democrat from Bloomington. "You can count on me as an ally in whatever you're doing, and I can work with Sharon and local legislators, but I think this is one of those things where we need a bipartisan coalition," Krishnamoorthy said in a Fairview classroom with Unit 5 school administrators and community leaders. Krishnamoorthy later sat down and talked with them about what is being done at the federal level and what still needs to happen. He also floated ideas of legislation and is interested in introducing such as offering universal free lunch. "Having come from my background, I just feel very sensitive to that issue, and so it's something that I'm hoping to also partner with others on," he said. The Community School, a program the Baby Fold introduced in 2012 at Fairview and later at Cedar Ridge Elementary School, provides direct support to families and students who may be struggling academically and outside of school, Kinsey said. It offers integrated student support with community school coordinators. "Our community school coordinators connect families to resources so that the burden isn't additionally placed on teachers and that teacher can teach because the job is hard enough," Kinsey said. "I'm not a teacher, I'm a social worker, and so we want to stay in our wheelhouse." Krishnamoorthy and others saw firsthand the work being done with the students taking part in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM-based after-school programs where learning how to create Morse code on a personal telegraph in groups. Funded primarily through school grants and donations, the program received a $5 million federal grant in 2024 that would be dispersed annually over 5 years, Kinsey said. This was to help support and expand programs at both Fairview and Cedar Ridge. Then, the U.S. Department of Education announced that the rest of the grant funds will not be rewarded as a result of another wave of cuts made by the Trump administration to defund initiatives involving diversity, equity, and inclusion. Kinsey said that without the funding, they could see cuts to after-school and summer programming, reductions in transportation and financial assistance for medical needs, and elimination of 3 of the program's 6 agency staff members in early February. "We're continuing to look for other avenues for money to support the 6 staff, and if all those fall through, we're going to have to follow through and reduce our staff down through the end of the school year," said Cleet Wilkerson, president and CEO at the Baby Fold. Wilkerson said the agency is looking and submitting a proposal to help secure additional McLean County funding for behavioral health services, and Unit 5 has leveraged some additional dollars to support the programming. "Community school won't disappear," Wilkerson said. "The Baby Fold is committed to this. Unit 5 is committed to this. It just depends on the economics. But you know who's going to lose? It's the kids and the families that are being served. As it stands, the program helps 250 students at Fairview and about 500 at Cedar Ridge, which also acts as the district's bilingual hub, offering support with programs like English as a second language." As superintendent, Weichel said she is concerned about the loss in the federal funding not only now but also in the coming years. She and others have been told to budget for no increase in Title I federal funding that helps low-income children for the next fiscal year and to expect a decrease to follow. Our Title I funding really supports our schools that have the highest percentage of students eligible for free and reduced lunch for English language learners, and then it also provides professional development for staff to best support those students, Weichel said. To think about that remaining flat next year and then being cut the following years would be devastating to a district, she added. As far as what the state is capable of doing to help, Chung said that with the federal cuts being made in areas like Medicaid and supplemental nutrition assistance programs, there's really not a lot that the state can do to backfill any other cuts being made. There's just no way. But I think trying to figure out at the state again, where do we prioritize again? Chung said. It's a really tough position, and we're trying to figure out how to do this in a humane sort of way. Krishnamoorthy said that the one piece of good news is federal government is not closing the Department of Education, at least in the current appropriations that are being passed. Unfortunately, however, Democratic members of Congress are playing defense when it comes to securing funding for Illinois. Krishnamoorthy agreed with Chung that cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, making covering the funding shortfalls difficult, and the pain is being felt across party lines. His office is looking at ways to bring bipartisan support from other U.S. House members, like Republicans Darren LaHood of Peoria and Mike Bost of Murfreesboro, and Democrat Eric Sorensen of Moline. Let's try to assist however we can, because this is affecting so many programs throughout the state, Krishnamoorthy said. It's not just here. It's your compatriots down south, north, and west, and east. So let's try to deal with it holistically. Krishnamoorthy said he remains concerned about how the Trump administration is doing, apparently random funding freezes and cuts under executive authority, and whether or not they are complying with the law. To me, that's a legal impoundment. Referring to the policy of refusing to spend money appropriated by Congress. What the Trump administration is doing under the guise of trying to make sure that money is spent properly is basically not spending the money they were told to spend, and that is illegal to me. We have to stand up and speak up, at least on a bipartisan basis, and if necessary, go to the courts if that is the last course, but that's what might have to happen in these situations, he added. News in brief. Nomad Theater to stage paint night. 3 hours ago. Normal. Nomad Theater Company is set to perform Paint Night, a heartfelt comedy by Kerry Krim in collaboration with the McLean County Arts Center next month. The performance will take place at the center's newly acquired Annex Building at 206 East Mulberry Street in Bloomington and is sponsored by Sonia Mayo. Paint Night is directed by Nomad co-founder Kristen Monson as part of her Master of Fine Arts in Directing program at Illinois State University. Performances will be at 7:30 p.m. February the 20th, 21st, 27th, and 28th, and 2 p.m. February the 22nd and March the 1st. Tickets are on sale now and are $15 for general admission, $26 for pallet seating, $28 for easel seating, and $45 for masterpiece seating. The cast features Alyssa Fabry, Lisa M. Howard, Cindy Lou Myers, Catherine Cosenza Starr, Chloe Silva, and Kevin Yale Vernon. Guests should note, the actors will not be amplified for this production, according to a news release. Tickets can be purchased at thenomadtheater.org or contact nomadtheatermoves@gmail.com for more information. And those dates for performances, once again, will be at 7:30 on February the 20th, 21st, 27th, and 28th at 2 p.m., February the 22nd and March the 1st at 2 p.m. Tickets are now on sale for $15 for general admission, $26 for pallet seating, $28 for easel seating, $45 for masterpiece seating. Tickets can be purchased at nomadtheater.org or contact nomadtheatermoves@gmail.com. That's nomadtheatermoves@gmail.com for more information. Today's Flick Fact, 3 hours ago. Today's question, 2 years after performing at the BCPA legendary 1970s rock band Three Dog Night is returning to Illinois in March, this time in Effingham. Quick, how did Three Dog Night get the name and why is it appropriate to ask now? Today's answer, the band takes its name after a girlfriend of a band member read about an Australian expression for an extremely cold night, when to keep warm, Indigenous Australians slept with dogs, usually two, but occasionally it was a three. Local Spotlight, Bloomington Parks and Rec to host job fair at the arena, by Drew Zimmerman, 19 hours ago. Bloomington. Opportunities to work in the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department will be on display at a job fair at Grossinger Motors Arena from 4:30 to 6 p.m. on February the 25th. The event will begin at the North Concourse and guests should enter from the front street doors. The job fair is an excellent chance for anyone curious about opportunities available within the city of Bloomington. Tom Rakestraw, marketing manager for the Parks and Recreation Department, said in a news release, "We're excited to offer a fun and welcoming experience, complete with free snacks and drinks, while program managers and staff will be on hand to answer questions about seasonal positions and job responsibilities. Program managers and staff will be on hand to discuss opportunities for applicants ages 15 and above to serve as lifeguards, swim instructors, seasonal laborers, youth sports instructors, cashiers, van drivers, and more. For a full list of positions, visit www.bloomingtonillinois.gov/jobs. Once again, for a full list of positions, visit www.bloomingtonillinois.gov/jobs. How time flies. 100 years ago, January 28, 1926, Will Rogers, the famous cowboy humorist who will write a series of weekly articles commenting upon contemporary affairs for the Pantograph, was born on a ranch in Oklahoma 43 years ago. 75 years ago, on January the 28th of 1951, Ozark Airlines, which began feeder service through Bloomington on November the 6th, will activate its fifth route, St. Louis to Tulsa, on February the 2nd. 50 years ago, January the 28th, 1976, contractors, January the 28th, were testing equipment that will hook Normal's new West Well field to the city's treatment plant. The three new wells between Sanford and Danvers will more than double the amount of water Normal will be able to pump. 25 years ago, January 28th of 2001, preparing for two new Unit 5 schools and the potential for 2,000 new houses dominates much of Normal's proposed 2001-2002 physical year budget that is up to about $3.5 million over last year. In addition, the town plans major street, sewer, and water projects so that more employees will be hired to help handle the heavy workload. However, the town's $12.2 million capital improvements budget and $20.9 million general operating fund budget, which represent the biggest parts of the overall $46.9 million spending plan, will not require an increase in property taxes. This year's budget totaled $43.4 million. Thank you for listening today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven. Stay warm and enjoy the rest of your day.